welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Hello and welcome to Counsel for the State. Today we kick off Season 3 of the podcast with a discussion about a little-known role the Idaho Attorney General plays in the state's ballot initiative process. Initiatives, of course, are proposals presented to voters for a statewide vote. Recent signature-gathering efforts to get initiatives on the ballot in our state have included things like the expansion of Medicaid, betting associated with horse racing several years ago, and medical marijuana. Once supporters of a particular initiative reach a certain threshold and present those signatures to the Secretary of State's office, this office, the AG's office, then puts the proposal under a legal microscope. And that process is what we're going to discuss today on Counsel for the State. To do so, we have co-host and Chief Deputy Brian Kane with us. Brian is fresh off a very busy legislative session. Brian, it's good to have you back in the saddle when it comes to the podcasting.
Thanks. I'm fully vaccinated and ready for action.
Amen.
Although I will say the legislature is not quite done yet.
Well, I can tell you're a little rusty. Your microphone's a bit far there. There you go. Scoot up a little bit. Also with us across the table, Robert Berry joins us. Robert is a deputy attorney general in the office's civil litigation division. And part of Robert's work this time of year is often conducting that legal analysis that I just mentioned on ballot initiatives. Robert, welcome back to Counsel for the State. Thanks for making some time.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be here.
For those who don't, maybe they've never heard the word certificate of review, what is it and how does it relate to this overall timeline and picture on getting ballot initiatives on the ballot for folks to vote for?
Sure. The certificate of review is something that the legislature actually requires of any idea that's submitted to consider for an initiative. And remember, an initiative is the citizen's opportunity to propose a law directly to the voters. And so instead of it going through the legislative process, the law is proposed, signatures are gathered, then it's placed on a ballot for us, the voters, to vote yes or no on whether that should become a law. It's also important to note that it's a law like any other law, and therefore the legislature is free to amend it or repeal it or otherwise treat it however they need to within their bodies. And there's examples of laws that have been adopted by initiative and then later either repealed or amended by the legislature. But the certificate of review was created by the legislature to say, hey, we want to find out what the legal issues are that arise with this legislative proposal to the citizens, right? So if the citizens are going to vote on it, we want to know if it's got any legal warts or lumps or if everything's just fine with it. And so that certificate of review is part of the process.
How long has the Office of the Attorney General been doing certificates of review?
Well, I can tell you they have been doing them since I came into the office. And I can also let you know that one of the very first certificates of review that I did garnered a $12.5 million tort claim against myself because the folks that received the certificate of review did not agree with the analysis. And so that was an interesting wake-up call to the Attorney General's office.
Well, you've opened that door. Now we have to talk about the outcome. What was the outcome of that suit?
So what actually wound up happening was, and this is the case for a lot of initiatives, is they just never get enough signatures. Signature gathering is probably the biggest stumbling block that folks run into. And I think it's one of those, I think it's something that initiative supporters probably tend to underestimate, is how do you find enough signatures to get it on the ballot? And I know that, you know, and to be honest, one of the big issues is you have to be a qualified elector to sign the initiative. And, you know, we know that voting and registering to vote are the types of questions that people sometimes over-report, right? If you go up to somebody and ask them if they voted, they'll say, yes, I voted. And then you compare your did you vote responses to the actual turnout, and there's a large gulf between those two. And so that's part of that process. But the certificate of review is essentially the very first legal analysis of the idea that's being pitched to voters for legislation.
Was the tort claim against you successful?
No, it wasn't.
No, you didn't have to pay out, and the state didn't have to pay out.
No.
Robert, you are in charge of doing some of these. As we discussed before, we turned on the microphone, that based on this being an office full of attorneys who have different areas of expertise, you get certain ones. You recently worked on one that that I reviewed, and I thought it was well done. Just talk briefly about your most recent work or current work that you're doing when it comes to certificates of review.
Sure. When our office is assigned a certificate of review, you know, the starting point is to look at the petition itself. So we look to see what's being proposed. And so usually it's the plain language, and that's where our review starts, and you then define what the subject matter is of the petition.
Robert, I'm going to have you move your mic just a little bit closer to where. Sorry. There you are. Perfect. Thank
and
you.
So once we kind of understand what's at issue, we're then able to kind of do a deep dive into the petition. And so to do that, you look at the statute that perhaps is being proposed, or is it a statute that's being amended? And so then you then want to look at the legislative history of that statute. So for example, the proposed petition that we received recently was to amend the initiative process. And so in order to do an analysis, we had to look to say, okay, where does that power derive from? And that is Idaho's constitution. So it was kind of fun. We got to do a step back into history to look to see how this particular statute, how it was enacted, how it had changed. And so you got to see kind of a winding road for this petition.
So when Brian comes to you and says, Robert, we have a certificate of review I need you to take a look at, this one in specifically has to do with the initiative process, how long do you have then to perform that analysis?
By statute, we have 20 business days. Okay. From the time that the AG's office receives the petition. My job is on the front end is to kind of do the bulk of the work, but there's also another amount of work that goes in. There's site checking that paralegals in our office do, and it is circulated for review by other attorneys as well. So the goal usually is, at least when it's received by our office, is to try to get it done within 10 business days, which is about 14 regular days. And that way it gives other people the chance and time to further provide input.
Gotcha.
And I think it's important to note, I mean, Robert does a nice job of laying out kind of the statutory analysis of this. But part of that is the initiative he just reviewed was a primarily statutory consistency type of analysis. But we receive a lot of initiatives that actually require constitutional analysis. And so, for example, recent initiatives that we've had to review have involved things like analysis under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, analysis under the Second Amendment, analysis for takings under the Fifth Amendment, interstate commerce issues that may come into play. And so anytime attorneys do an analysis, a lot of times they have a few boxes that they check off, right? You start with your federal constitutional issues. Then you would go to maybe if there's some federal law preemptive sort of issues that you have to be aware of, then the state constitution. And so, for example, with initiatives, right, Article 3, Section 1 sets out the umbrella for initiatives within the state. And all it says is that the people have reserved to themselves the initiative power subject to such rules as the legislature may adopt, which means that's not going to figure too prominently in this analysis, because the lawmaking authority is what really sets forth the ability to put forward the initiatives within Idaho. But it's important to know for folks that are looking at this, right, there's a lot of analysis that goes on that maybe doesn't even see paper, right? Because we've got to make sure this doesn't create a federal constitutional question. It doesn't create a state constitutional question. And there's no need to put that in writing because it doesn't, but that's still part of each analysis that is done.
Well, and I would love to talk before we're wrapped up today about sort of how you go about, Robert, as an attorney doing just that, you know, looking at a ballot initiative through all of these different lenses to make sure that you've addressed all of the potential issues by the time, you know, 20 days have come and gone. I should back up, Brian. The process, once the initiative reaches a certain level of signature gathering, it goes to the Secretary of State. At that point, then, what happens? How does this come into our office? And then you're the person essentially in our office who receives it. How do you then figure out where in our office it needs to go for the analysis to be done?
Sure. And part of that, Robert addressed a little of that in his first answer to your first question. But the idea for a law is created, and then it's circulated, and you have to have the signatures of 20 registered voters that are, and that back packet is then submitted to the Secretary of State. Essentially, what they're saying is, look, you got to have an idea that at least appeals to 20 folks before we're even going to make the Attorney General's office, for example, and the Secretary of State start to go through this administrative
process. Which is a really low bar.
It is low, although I will tell you, it's not uncommon for folks to show up with 20 signatures and have to go out and get a couple more because it turns out that original 20, there's three or four that maybe aren't registered voters or they gave a fake address or who knows. Right. There's all, you know, you never know when SpongeBob is going to sign your initiative petition.
So the Secretary of State gets it, has to verify.
He gets it, verifies those signatures, and then he sends a letter to our office requesting the certificate of review. And that starts the process.
Okay. And then you get one that comes in that says it's a certificate of review that's needed for a petition for initiative relating to, and this is one on our list to do, raising the minimum wage to $14 an hour by 2026. What do you do?
So at that point, usually I read through the petition, get a feel for what the subject matter is. And then, you know, one of the great things about the Attorney General's office is we are the largest law office in the state of Idaho. We've got about 120 attorneys, which gives us subject matter over a lot of areas of expertise. At that point, I identify who the most likely candidate or candidates are to have that subject matter expertise and ask them to prepare the first draft of the certificate of review.
And 20 days, 20 business days, and remind me, that's in statute?
That's in statute,
okay,
yes.
Okay, and then we have to get that out the door in 20 days. Are we able to, we have to do that, so we do. Robert, in terms of workload, how tight of a turn is that for an attorney when you're presented with something and given 20 days to do an analysis?
Well, you know, we do have full workloads and caseloads, and so these come in without really our notice, and so once it reaches your door, you kind of drop everything and you turn your attention to this analysis because you never know how long it's going to take. You're not quite certain how much research you're going to have to do or even how long the opinion might be. So it does take up your cases, your time for that particular moment.
And be candid when I ask you this question, as candid as you're willing to be. Is there a bit of a moment where there's sort of this, oh no, what have I gotten myself into here? What has Brian gotten me into here? I only have 20 days to put this one under the microscope.
No, I mean, I think as Brian alluded to, you know, he does identify people who have perhaps a subject matter expertise, and so it's interesting. I found it to be fascinating. So it was a fun project to do, and so there was
no tears were shed.
No.
Okay.
Good.
And I think it's important to note, right, the analysis, we're not trying to kick over every legal rock and pebble. We just want to spot the big issues for folks and say, hey, look, as you go forward, here are the big picture items that you need to be worried about. And, you know, at times we'll have an initiative and we will point out, look, you've got some grammatical inconsistencies here that for purposes of codification, you probably do want to smooth out. But we've gotten initiatives that have been kind of rewrites of entire chapters of code, and with the sophistication of having the code cites and everything already plugged into it. And then we've also gotten what I would refer to as almost like the back of a napkin for a legislative idea where there isn't it. They don't identify where in the code it would be or anything else. It's just here's how we're. This is the law that we're going to pitch. And then I think the other thing to always keep in mind is these certificates of review are advisory only. So the circulators are free to accept, reject, modify, whatever they want to do with it. And then they're further, initiatives are not bound by a requirement for constitutionality. And so, for example, you could have the most unconstitutional idea in the world and circulate it for as an initiative. And a great example of that process coming to bear in Idaho was the Idaho State Lottery was originally created by initiative. That initiative was adopted by the people, but the Idaho Supreme Court struck it down because the lottery violated the, at that time, constitutional provision on gambling. But that initiative and its support created the catalyst for Idaho's constitution to be amended to allow for a state lottery.
So a question I have based on that being advisory, who is it for? It's the state's attorney that is conducting the analysis, but is it for the state or is it for those who are supporting the initiative?
So the answer is yes. It's for those folks and more. Right. I actually think that the way that the legislature envisioned the certificate of review was for it to be an important transparency piece for the Idaho voters, meaning here's the idea and the folks that are promoting the initiative are going to say this is a great idea for Idaho, here's all the reasons why. Then the Idaho Attorney General's office creates a certificate of review that says this idea has the following legal issues associated with it, and here's what that means, and here's why you should care about that. And so it creates this kind of uninterested analysis of the proposal for the voters.
So continuing our timeline, it comes from the Secretary of State's office to Brian. Brian looks at, you know, the topic at hand, basically says who in the office has the expertise to quickly and efficiently and accurately do this work. Robert, it comes to you. It's on a ballot initiative, which is sort of meta, isn't it?
Yes.
Initiative related to initiatives. Tell me the first thing, you know, once you start to dig in, what do you do? What's step number one as an attorney who has to put together a certificate of review in basically 2 weeks?
Well, we are fortunate to have Westlaw, which is an online service that allows us to review and read case law. So basically, you try to identify any case that may have an impact on this petition.
And so you're actually putting in search terms that will hopefully help you identify all of the case law that you need to read to understand.
Correct. It's okay. Google for attorneys.
Okay. Now, when you're Googling Westlawing Westlaw for case law, how many results do you have? How many cases do you have to look at that point?
It depends upon your search logic and the type of words that you're putting together. And so it depends. Each search can range from perhaps maybe 5 to 55. So then it's going through and culling those cases to say, well, that's not really on point, it's not relevant, but these cases are. So then you separate those and you put them in a folder to return and read more in depth at a later time.
Okay. And that is a fairly in-depth process in and of itself, because most opinions, and these are opinions that come from various levels of the courts all throughout the country or just in the state of Idaho?
If it's a federal issue, then you might look to perhaps Ninth Circuit and Supreme Court precedent. If it's a state issue, then you're focusing more on what the Idaho Supreme Court has said. You're likely coming to the library downstairs on floor one and looking at the legislative history to see what comments were made when perhaps the original statute was passed and see how that marries up with the proposed initiative here. Because again, as Brian said, this is an educative process and we're trying to educate the public as to what the significance of this petition is, because it's much different than the deliberative process in the legislature, mm-hmm. where a bill is read, 1 to 3 times, and there's a lot of discussion. So really, in my view, I feel like the certificate of review is the body of a document that provides the most information about that petition.
But in order for...
So I think it's also important to note that particularly when you're researching in the initiative arena, like as Robert was addressing, you know, the initiative on initiatives, that oftentimes there are states that have much more fully developed initiative case law than Idaho. If you think about the number of cases that have been litigated on the initiative process in Idaho, there actually aren't that many. And so when you get into kind of the ins and outs and twists and turns, sometimes we do have to look to other states' case law just to understand how a court might reason through it, right? It's absolutely not binding on our Idaho Supreme Court or our district courts, but it's educational and illustrative of how a court may approach a similar issue if it's put in front of them. And so we do look beyond just Idaho cases, in part because there are states that have been extremely active as far as initiative litigation goes, you know, especially when you look at California or Washington or Oregon. I mean, those are three states that have been very active within this initiative arena for a lot longer than Idaho.
So step one, getting your head around all of the case law that's out there. What's next?
Again, then perhaps coming to the library to look at the legislative history of any statute that may be affected. And then once you've kind of identified your, I call them primary source documents, your cases that are on point and any history, then you read and you start preparing an outline of how you think all these cases relate and affect this petition. So for this particular one, I thought it was important to look at the historical context of the statute because I thought that would provide some further insight into how this proposed petition would affect existing statute.
Brian, does an attorney like to dig into something and put it under the microscope, as I say, or is this more of a chore? And does that vary by attorney?
So I think, I mean, the classic attorney response here is it depends, right? And I think that, I mean, to me, when I look at the certificate of review, it mirrors up very closely to kind of the classic legal memo that you're asked to prepare in law school legal writing courses.
Okay, that's right? Helpful.
Here's what it looks like. And so, you know, to some degree, every attorney has been trained to prepare a certificate of review. The difference for us, you know, in government law, you know, a lot of times one of the blessings of government law is that you get to practice the law that you like learned in law school and went to law school, like the motivations for why people go to law school. You know, I want to do constitutional law or something like that. This is that, right? This is right into kind of that sweet spot of what folks, a lot of times, their aspirations for why they become lawyers and that sort of stuff. And so I think it's a little bit rewarding. I think it's also rewarding because every one of these certificates of review is published in our annual report. And so the attorneys that work on these get the chance to see their name published in our annual report every year. And that's a document that is now part of the history of the state of Idaho. I mean, that's a big deal.
Are there attorneys that you don't feel like want to do one of these? If you take a certificate of review to them, they say, Brian, if you make me do this, I'm going to give you my 2 weeks notice.
Well, I don't think I've ever had that response, although I will. I mean, I'm self-aware enough to note that, you know, when attorneys are assigned something from the central office, right, our jokes are always funny. So I don't know that folks would necessarily say that. We do, however, number one, we never want to overburden our attorneys. And so we check in with them and we say, hey, do you have the time and the resources available to take this on in addition to the other stuff that has to get done? Because remember, these certificates of review are unanticipated, right? We don't know they're coming. And then they're just added to your pile of already existent work.
Right.
Right. And so if we've got attorneys that say, for example, have an Idaho Supreme Court hearing, or maybe they've got a big brief in a federal court case that's due, you know, we have to make sure that they can still continue to litigate and defend the state of Idaho legally while also being able to accomplish this certificate of review in a very short time frame.
Yeah. And I think that question coming from the non-attorney at the table is sort of an acknowledgement of the, my goodness, I have to drop everything that's already on my plate and do this exhaustive legal analysis of this particular issue in which I'm responsible for turning over all of the stones and making sure that I completely understand it. And I'm as elaborate and as thorough as I need to be. And I just think that it's, you know, I don't necessarily know how well I would do if I was an attorney in an alternate universe, Brian, and I was busy and then you came to me and said, Scott, you need to, you know, you've got 10 days to get this out the door.
But it's very similar to public records inquiries.
That's true.
Right? Because a public record request comes in and it goes right on top of the pile of whatever existent work you have, and then it carries with it an extremely tight deadline,
three days.
3 days or 10 days if it's a larger request that you're required to locate records, right? And so these are things that are common and almost routine within the world of legal work.
Gotcha.
Right? You've got an existent amount of work, and then something unanticipated walks through the door that you kind of have to drop everything and deal with. And so, again, you know, I think that as burdensome as it may be, it's also the sort of thing that attorneys in particular are ready for, right? This is what they've gone to law school to learn how to do. If they've been practicing for a while, they start to understand how you prioritize things. And I'll be honest, I mean, within our office, we use these also as learning opportunities for attorneys. Because of the thoroughness of the certificate of review, it allows an attorney to become very familiar with the subject in a very short amount of time, which can then pay dividends as we look down the road at other legal needs.
That's a good point. So Robert, going back to the procedure that you employ, you have written the outline now after you have done the case review, you've looked at the legislative history, at the visit downstairs to the legal library, you've put that outline together. What's next?
Well, in this case, I got thrown a curveball.
Okay.
And that curveball was, the petition was seeking to amend Title 34, Section 1805.
Okay, I think I know the curveball now.
And during my review, the governor signed legislation affecting that statute, and it became effective immediately because there was an emergency clause. And so this is happening while I'm doing my certificate of review, mm-hmm. and that made me realize, well, okay, this is also seeking to amend 34, 1805. Does the bill that the governor just signed, does that now affect how this petition is circulated? And so that was something I had to step back and think about to figure out, okay, given that this is a new requirement, I probably should add that the new statute or the new bill that was just signed by the governor will affect this petition.
Yeah, and it ended up that you had to address that, and that is part of the certificate of review, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and people can read about that. That's on our website, available under the opinion link. Just click on the certificates of review, and you'll be able to see the current ones for 2021, including Robert's. Okay, so you had to add a portion of analysis to your product. What was the next? At some point, you start writing, I would assume.
Correct.
Okay.
So after you've read all the cases, statutes, history, identified the legal issues, you start drafting your memo. You want to identify all the issues that you've come across in your research. And then you want to say, okay, how will this play out? Is it appropriate? And you at that point in time, you can provide some opinion on whether or not the merits of this petition. And so you include that near the end of your memorandum as well. So basically, it's issue spotting, setting forth your conclusions of the issues that you found, and then making a recommendation at the end.
Okay.
Because when you start this process, you don't know how it's going to play out. You just look at everything and figure out, this is how I think it shakes out.
And then essentially at that point, you're finished with the lion's share of your work. We mentioned 20 days is what is statutorily imposed for our timeline as an office to get this turned out.
Yep.
But you mentioned about half of that is what you really try and do the bulk of your work in, so others in the office can then start to take a look at it. Where does it go when it leaves your desk?
So once I'm done, I send it to my legal assistant, who then proofs it as well. And she makes sure the formatting's appropriate, that all the fonts in the correct type setting. And then at that point in time, I send it to the central office. And the central office has certain processes and procedures that then
start.
Brian, is there a style that these need to follow? A legal standard?
Yeah, I mean, if you look in our old, in all of our annual reports, every certificate of review is laid out in the same format, and so we try to keep that similar, and we try to keep it the same for all certificates of review, so that when anyone opens up a annual report, they can easily identify the certificates of review versus attorney general opinions or legal guidelines. And that's important because a certificate of review is, apart from other reviews that we do, it's the one that most often is a legal review of something that maybe never takes effect, right? Because they don't get the signature, so it doesn't even get on the ballot. Or maybe it does get on the ballot, but it doesn't get voted in. Or it gets voted in, and then the legislature changes or amends or repeals it. And so they do have a specific format, and as ominous as Robert has made the sending of it over to the central office. really what we do
is a very ceremonial process with rose petals.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The cross samurai swords of the central office. But really what that is again, what we're doing is we're trying to make sure that these are all consistent. This is one of those legal analyses that is signed by the Attorney General. And so we want to make sure that the Attorney General has time to read through it. And the Attorney General does read through these. He edits them. He will come into my office and say, hey, did you see this? And hopefully I did my due diligence and I did see it. And so we have a discussion. But part of it is, this is a process that, because we know it's going out there to the public, there are a lot of folks that review, and a lot of that is to make sure the work of our attorneys is put out there in the right format without the ability for folks to kind of second guess it, right? We really want to make sure that they're supported and that this is the singular legal voice for the state of Idaho.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you mentioned that the Attorney General signs them, but Robert's name is on that analysis, right? It does say near the end, analysis done by Deputy Attorney General Robert Berry. So there's no stealing of thunder there.
Nope.
Credit is given. Credit is very much due. So, Brian, it wraps up in the central office. All of the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. You then walk it down the hall to the Secretary of State and say,
We actually mail it to the initiative proponents.
Okay.
And we deliver a copy to the Secretary of State.
Now.
And the Secretary of State publishes it on their website as well.
Okay. So those two entities, different players in this process, how does that certificate of review get used by different entities once it's outside of the office?
That's a mystery to me. You know, we don't get involved with how folks use the certificate of review. We just prepare them. I will tell you that the certificate of review is an important trigger because the proponents receive the certificate of review. They have the ability at that point to change their petition, and some do based on what we identify in the certificate of review. But then they resubmit their petition with a request that our office prepare ballot titles. And so then we prepare the ballot titles. And once those ballot titles are issued, and the Department of Financial Management also issues a fiscal note, once those two things are delivered along with the certificate of review, now that petition is certified for circulation among the entire state of Idaho.
And the ballot title is essentially the language that will appear on my ballot when I walk into the voting booth in November.
Right, and there's two titles that are prepared. One is a short ballot title, which is no more than 20 words, and then the other is a long ballot title, and I think the word limit on that is, I think it's like 220 words or something. But most people make their decision based on the short ballot title, right? That's the thing they're going to read. Not too many people want to suffer through that long ballot title.
And the fiscal note is essentially saying, if you as a voter vote yay or nay on this, it's going to affect the state
in this way
financially.
It's the same. It's the same as the fiscal note on legislation that is adopted by the Idaho legislature.
Okay.
Right? Upon adoption of this legislation, it will be a $50,000 hit to the general fund, or this will be fully funded by sources outside the state, therefore there will be no impact.
Now, if I happen to be an opponent of whatever this initiative is, And I'm going to watch with interest Robert's analysis, whatever Deputy Attorney General's analysis, whatever the certificate of review says. Am I essentially then going to get sort of at least a head start on a legal critique if I'm going to potentially pursue litigation against this based on the work that the state through the AG's office has done?
So yes, I mean, and I want to make sure that folks understand these certificates are not just used for litigation, right? They're used as folks try to create a reason for maybe why you shouldn't sign a petition, right? And they're used in that fashion. Then if it advances to the ballot, they may become part of the pro or con argument for the initiative, right? And so the certificate gives kind of this overarching analysis of the proposal that can be used to support the proposal, and it can be used to kind of critique the proposal as well.
But that's not something that this office can or should take into account. If the pitch is down the middle of the plate, it's a strike.
Right. As the Attorney General says, we just call the balls and strikes.
All right, gentlemen, that's very helpful. I've learned a lot. I'm counting six on our current requests. Do we know of any more that may be coming in here in the next few weeks? It looks like there are multiples in play right now. In fact, they're all very, very current.
Are those just the initiatives? Do they include the referenda?
I see a certificate of review for petition for initiative regarding number of signers required for initiatives. Certificate of review for petition for initiative regarding the Quality Education Act. Another one for raising the minimum wage to $12 by 2025, $13 by 2026. Another one for $14 to 2026, and a wage to $15 by 2027. Are those all competing groups with the same, just out of curiosity?
Don't know that, but we also do this process, the certificate of review for referendums as well.
Okay. So it looks like our Department of Labor attorneys, Brian, will be busy with the minimum wage work.
Yeah, although I will note, I mean, there's four of those there, but it's actually four kind of the same
That makes sense.
Petition. It just increases the wage in a different fashion.
Okay.
So the analysis, the underlying analysis will very likely be
pretty similar.
The same.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have exhausted my list of questions. I think all my personal curiosity on this has also been satisfied. Robert, is there anything else you would like to add pertinent to the topic today?
No, just thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate it. Brian, anything you want to add before we turn the recorder off?
The one thing I will add is that for folks that are interested in initiatives and referenda, the Secretary of State's website has a historical list of all of the initiatives and referenda that have ever been put in front of Idaho citizens, and that includes the outcomes of what those were. And I think it's incredibly educational to go back and see what it is that's been proposed by an initiative, because some very significant pieces of Idaho legislation have been proposed by initiative, including Idaho's campaign finance law was originally adopted in 1974 based on an initiative. The Fish and Game Commission was created by initiative. And so you think about it, and I know that it's easy to kind of downplay the significance of an initiative because of how difficult it is to get it on the ballot, but it's also important to recognize that some very key concepts that we almost take for granted within government now were originally proposed by initiative. And even the state lottery, right? The state lottery came into being based on a strong initiative movement. And so it is an interesting aspect of lawmaking within Idaho. And I think that it's something that we're very likely to continue to discuss.
Well, thank you both for your time. Brian, when we started the podcast 2 years ago, we talked about wanting to discuss and shine a light on parts of the office that don't necessarily get talked about publicly. So perhaps it's appropriate as we start season three today that we're talking about certificates of review, an important part of the many things that get done here in the Office of the Attorney General. So Robert Berry, Deputy Attorney General in the Civil Litigation Division here in the office. Robert, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. And Brian Kane, co-host in the office's Chief Deputy, thank you as well.
Thank you.
As mentioned earlier, Counsel for the State is the Office of the Attorney General's podcast. We are kicking off season number 3. If you're new to the podcast, we invite you to listen to past episodes by using iTunes, Spotify, or the Attorney General's website. You do not need to be a podcaster to hear our podcast. All episodes are archived at ag.idaho.gov. You can just click on a link and then listen on your computer or your phone, whatever works. Just look for the word podcast on the AG's homepage and you'll be able to find this and all other episodes. Thanks again for being with us, and we hope that you will subscribe and join us for the next episode of Counsel for the State.